Great morning, everyone. Hey, guess what time it is? That's right. It's time for the number one talk show, your favorite talk show, The Culture Call, with yours truly, L. Spencer Smith, right here on Praise 93.3790 WTSK. It is the place where Tuscaloosa meets the world. And of course, for the next 2 hours, we're going to be right here from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. talking a little bit about everything. That's right, from society to sports, education to economics, from religion to relationships. And as always, I like to remind y'all of this. As always, we are here to provide a safe space to have empowering, controversial, and sometimes provocative conversations. And guess what? We're going to chat it up and learn together right here as we do it on The Culture Call. Hey, shout out number one. Welcome to all of you who are our first time listeners to The Culture Call. I am so glad that you have joined us on this morning. And I don't know how you heard about us, but I'm so very glad that you did. We would not be in existence without precious and kind people like you listening to us every day. So no matter if you're sitting at your desk with the ear pods on, you're driving through our city, or maybe you're on vacation, whatever it is, guess what? We are so glad and elated to have you on with us this morning. Shout out number two. That's right. Huh? For all of our faithful, dedicated, committed listeners. Hey, you are the reason why we are the number one talk show right here in West Alabama. Hey, I'm telling you, and I'm so grateful for you. Every time we see each other, every time you see me, you pull me to the side and let me know of the good job that I'm doing for our community and that I am necessary. And I really, from the bottom of a grateful heart, I really appreciate that. You don't know how much that means to me to know that what I'm doing is really having a positive impact on you and our entire communities. So, hey, thank you so very much. And last but not least, shout out number three, Brother Jay. So very glad and grateful to have the man with the plan passing me this hot baton from 5 a.m. all the way up to this very hour, that he gives me the opportunity to sit co-host with him and side by side and run on to see what the end is going to be. I'm so glad for his genius, his insight, and what he brings, playing the best and great gospel music, inspiring us and teaching us as we learn together right here at 790 WTSK 93.3 FM. Hey, glad about it. Listen, do me a favor if you've not done it already. I want to encourage you to go ahead, open up your app, your Apple phone and your Android phone, the App Store. Go there. Do that for me. And in that search section, put in Praise 93.3 FM, and there you will find a free 99 app. I say it all the time. It doesn't cost you a thing to download it on your phone. There, you'll be able to listen to The Culture Call, Brother Jay, early in the morning. If you got to get up early, you'll be able to listen to Minister Chris. You'll be able to hear Sister Darlene late at night and all of the amazing programming that we have here on 93.3 FM. I'm super excited about it. Hey, you can get that app and get notice of the weather, current events. So much is going on, sports. I tell you, wherever you are, you open up that app and you can hear us all around the world. Listen, I'm telling you. And so whether you're in, Topeka, Kansas, whether you are in Miami, Florida, Columbia, South Carolina, or maybe right here in this beautiful city of Tuscaloosa, Alabama, Montgomery, Birmingham, Mobile, Huntsville, Gordo, Reform, Aliceville, Utah, you name it. If you've got that app, you can hear us everywhere you are. And we're so super grateful for that. Hey, beloved, go ahead and send me your public service announcements to culturecall.praise@gmail.com. That's culturecall.praise@gmail.com. And let me be your PR specialist. Let everybody, Lottie, Dottie, and everybody know the wonderful things that you're doing in our community, whether it's at your church, your social organization, your sorority, your fraternity, whether you're an artist getting ready to have a concert or a preacher getting ready to run a revival. Yeah, whatever it is. We want to let everybody know what you're doing, because, hey, we want to put some faces in that place so you don't want to be sitting up in an empty building doing what you do. No, you know why? Because we do it better when we do it together. And as always, you can write down the golden number 205-752-4800. That's 205-752-4800. Chat it up with us, or you can follow me on Facebook, our social media page. Just go to The Culture Call, press that like button. There you go. Press that like button and you're following us. And now you can see all of the wonderful things that we put on our Facebook page. Thank you so much for being a part of our Culture Call family. Listen, I need you to do me a favor. Sit back and relax and grab you some coffee. Maxwell House of Starbucks, you know how we do it. Maybe coffee's not your thing. Grab you some herbal tea. Y'all know I've been telling you about these teas, right? Chamomile if you're trying to calm down. What is it? Green tea if you're trying to get a little caffeine kick, trying to help you toward lunch. Or maybe you can do my new tea, hibiscus. Go ahead and get that. That hibiscus is good for high blood pressure, cholesterol, diabetes. Listen, I'm telling you, the healing is in the trees of the earth. I'm telling you. So go ahead and get you some of that. Or maybe coffee and tea are not your thing. Hey, your things, guess what? You can definitely get you some spring or some alkaline water. Flush out that system. Wake those cells up. Detox that body. And come on, let's get into the culture. Listen, we made it to the month of February. Yay! Yes, I'm telling you. And I'm so super excited. And I'm grateful to have you following me. It is Black History Month. It is Black History Month. And we're going to do everything that we can do to feature and to spotlight those heroes, both past and present, who are making a change in our community, for our community. I am super excited. Remiss upon me that we are yet in a political season for our local elections, all of that. And we're still going to have this month some of the candidates coming through to talk to you. We're encouraging them to do so. But we definitely want to highlight, those our ancestors and our forefathers, our foreparents that brought us over, that we can be who we are and we can have what we have even in modern times. And there are people who are yet shaking the table and making their mark in history in our present moment, right? So that we don't have to look just backwards, but we can look at now and we can also project forward concerning Black History Month. And I'm super excited. Not only that, it's Love Month, February. That's right. We're going to talk a little bit about love this month, a whole lot about love, right? Because if we don't, you know, the greatest is love. The greatest of these three, faith, hope, and charity. Faith, hope, and love is love. And I love the word that they use in the text, because that word charity is love given. That, you see, it's not just love held and something held close to you. That means that charity speaks of love in demonstration. And, you know, that the Bible tells us that we ought to love in word and in deed. That means that love is, like faith, an action word. You can't say you love me and never do anything that is to my benefit. And so we got to make sure that we're going to talk a little bit about love on this month as well. And if you're like me, I'm focusing with regards to the connection of Black history and love. And we're going to be talking about the Black family as well this month. I want you to lean into that. We're going to be setting some kind of context for our month's conversation, because I am very concerned, as I should be. I am very concerned, as I should be, about the Black family. Now, I don't want to disenfranchise any other culture, any other, you know, ethnic group, but I'm a chocolate man. I'm a chocolate man with a chocolate wife, with chocolate sons and daughters. I pastor a chocolate church. My cosmology is chocolate, you know. This is just the frame and the journey that God has put me in. And I want to make sure that we are doing all that we can do to elevate the Black family in our communities, because guess what? It is the essential cornerstone for all that we will be and do in the future. Without the Black family, there is no Black future. And that is facts. Without any family, there is no future. And so we're going to have a conversation about that. And I'm going to shake the table a little bit today, like what's new, right? But yeah, I'm going to talk about some things about the Black family. And so I want to start off with a little something like this, okay? So we're going to try to mesh it all in. One of the things that I think is very important as we begin to broach this conversation is, when we talk about Black family, what comes to your mind? First of all, when we talk about family, what comes to your mind? And then more specifically, when we talk about Black family, what comes to your mind? I think it is imperative for us to begin to do some definitions, right? That we begin to look inward intrinsically. We begin to do an introspective of our community. Now, I want you to understand that I am, again, not disconnected or blind to the fact that there are systemic and institutionalized things that may be against or have been historically and even presently against the full evolution and the full forward motion of the black family. I'm not removed upon that, but I am a product of that. When I can tell you that it does not matter what kind of edict, law, wall, barrier put up in front of us, we come from a people that are strong. We come from a people that causes, a hog innards to be made into chitlins and to delicacies, right? That we can take leftovers and make an entire buffet and smorgasbord that the people that gave us the bad stuff comes and eat the stuff that we, once we put our creativity on it. We are the people who turned our pain and our struggle into sonnets, into poetry, into music, right? We are people that come from folks that could not read that have become laureates and teachers and doctors, et cetera. I mean, so, you know, I say that recognizing what historical limitations and boundaries have been placed upon black people in this country in particular, that we have always been given a grace to overcome, right? It's not just we shall, but we have. I think we shall is prophetic, right? That whatever you put in our way, we shall. Because our testimony, here it is also prophetic, which is we did overcome. We have overcome, right? So we're not intimidated by anything that we see and or read on the news. We understand what's going on. We understand that the face of anything negative or the face that anything that people who are in power want to use to divide the country, they will put a black face on it. That's facts. That was a fact attack, right? And so, you know, whether it's affirmative action, whether it is CRT, critical race theory, whether it is diversity, equity, inclusion, DEI, whatever it is that they want to use as a wedge issue to divide our country, they'll put a black face on it, even when we're not the primary beneficiaries of whatever program it is, right? That black people were not the beneficiaries, the prime beneficiaries of affirmative action. That we were not the prime beneficiaries of DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And if you look by and large, I said this before, the primary beneficiaries of all both of those programs were white women. And the people who were least to get the benefit were black folks. That's the facts. I mean, you can look up the data and all of those things like that. But here's the reality. When they get ready to take it down, when they get ready to remove it, when they get ready to demonize it, what face do they put on it? And so the truth of the matter is that we've always made it, regardless whether we had a DEI or a CRT or whatever other alphabet, you know, we've always had G-O-D. We've always had God on our side. We've always had the ability to move into spaces, into places, to show our excellence, to show our intelligence, to show our divine attributes that God has endowed us with. We've always been able to do that. And so when I start talking about the black family, an element that has been under strain and stress and challenge since it has been on these shores, that as soon as the black husband, the black wife, and the black children entered upon these Americanized shores, colonial shores, that has been a tension there. They used the black family to inflict and to disconnect, to inflict pain and disconnect and devalue and to as a sign of torture, the separation of black families, the persecution of black fathers, the disconnect from value. They have used the idea or the platform of the black family. And over time, the reality of the black family has not necessarily been investigated primarily as it should be. Why? Because I think we take some things for granted and a lot of us don't know the history. And so we speak out of a modern context, but we don't even understand the divine and the God reason for why he gave family in the first place. Right. And so I came across this this quote that I want to kind of start off with. And this quote is from Stephanie Lehart. And it says this: "Dear black families, it's time to break free from generational curses that bring hurt, pain, and struggle. Let's change the narrative and trade dysfunction for love, unity, and support. You have the power to uplift your family. Share your knowledge and experiences to help them get ahead. Educate, empower, and inspire them to achieve Black excellence. And that's a quote from Stephanie Lehart. I love how she opens it up because she brings a level of endearment. Dear Black families, it's time to break from generational curses that bring hurt, pain, and struggle. She challenges us, Coach Call, in this quote to really understand that these whole ideas of generational dysfunctions and what religious folks call curses, these generational impediments are really the things that we need to face and focus on. And we understand the backdrop. We don't have to rehearse that. We can do that every year. But the reality is there are some things generationally that we must look at and we must face. We must confront in order to free ourselves from the pain, the hurt, and the struggles, right? And we have to change the narrative of what is not just the purpose, but the promise of the Black family. We have to trade those dysfunctions for love, unity, and support. And I wanted to start off with this quote because I think, Coach Call, one of the things that we've got to deal with in our community is that we are highly intelligent people, which means we don't have to blame external people, external systems. We don't have to blame, look at what this person did, or look at what this person didn't vote for me, or this person removed this. We don't have to look at that. That's not something that we have to look at. What Stephanie says, and I agree with, is that we've got to look at what's going on in our home structure, what's going on in our house. What are the decisions and the choices that we are making as Black people and then Black families, as Black men, as Black women, as Black boys, as Black girls? What decisions are we making that perpetuate generational dysfunctions? Now, before I go any further, I'm not talking about anybody in particular. I'm talking about a framework or a system or something that is paradigmatic with regards to when we look over the country that the Black family seems to be struggling. And in some cases, it's not. But in a lot of cases, it is, especially in this modern generation. And we're going to talk about that because I brought some numbers with me, right? I could pontificate. Rattle off some what I think is facts. But when you bring numbers, people lie, numbers don't, right? And so, but I want to start off talking about, we have to begin to understand that our religion is oftentimes different than our reality. See, when we came to this country, they imputed a level of religion or a particular slave doctrine in our minds. And a lot of that is still perpetuated. A lot of that is still going on. We still believe a lot of those things. A lot of us, and function out of that, right? We say things like, I've got Jesus and that's enough. Jesus never said that. That's not in the Bible. I mean, we said it in such conviction because the reality is that you can have Jesus. Jesus said, I'm coming that you might have life and have that more abundantly. So you can have Jesus and not have the abundant life in your reality. So all you got is a Jesus, a religion, but your reality is no different. That we got Jesus and we go to church and we do all those kind of things. Hey, I was born and raised and bred in church. I'm a church boy. I love the church. It's what I've dedicated my life to, but the reality is that you can have Jesus and not be able to pay your bills, living in poverty. You can have Jesus and your family, your daughters are experiencing teenage pregnancy and your sons are being locked in jail and you're in so much debt. You see what I'm saying? And you can have Jesus. You can be a deacon in the church, a mother, a missionary. You can be a preacher and still be struggling in your body and your health. You see? And so our religion does not look like our reality. And if you're not careful, watch this, chocolate people. If we're not careful, and I think we've done this and we're probably in a generation that we got to undo this. We have deified and almost idolized strain and struggle to seem like that makes us more righteous, more holy. And it does not. That struggle and suffering, and we're able, we live in a perpetual episode of good times because we got this whole idea that, you know, Florida had Jesus, but they're struggling every day. Their lights are off. Now, hear me. I started off this conversation saying that it's not that I am discrediting or discounting or disconnecting the vile and vicious realities of what supremacy, white supremacy, and all these other systemic things have done. No. What I am saying, that a lot of the perpetuation of these things in 2025 don't necessarily have to deal with those things. Right? That our foreparents did not struggle and suffer so that we could idolize it to the point to think that we had to as well. That the language that came out of their mouth is that you got to do better. Do better than me. Do better than them. Don't limit yourself. Get your education. Make something of yourself. Make wise decisions, right? And so they couldn't vote, for example. They were beaten. They were killed. They were lynched. They lost jobs. Everything because they just wanted to be treated as humans to vote. And then on this side, we have millions of our people that won't vote. Not can't, but just won't. And then don't want to be told, but don't try to guilt me into voting between the lesser of between two evils. Bro, you just, listen, lesser of two evils. You can only make that statement. Watch this. You only make that statement because of something that has been taught to you. The lesser of two evils. What does that even mean? When did you become the righteous standard? See, here's the deal. That slave teaching left us with this kind of God that always wants us to choose a holy and a righteous standard far above anything that any human could live. That's what was, and so we measure each other, we measure ourselves by that. The folks that taught it to you do not. They don't measure themselves. They don't measure folks that look like them like that. They don't, no. Listen, point in case, if there were the folks that tried the coup on January 6th of 2021, if that were black folks, this president and no other one would have pardoned them at all. You know why? Because in their framework, they shouldn't have done it, and they deserve to be in jail. You see what I'm saying? Right. But they exonerated over 1,500 of themselves. See, so you're left with the inequality of a religious system that always wants you to be right. But don't want to give you your rights. Right. And so when we think about that, we sit home because you don't even go to church, but you're voting between the lesser of two evils. You don't even go, you don't have a religious context to your life, but we can't put Jezebel in the office. So, okay, so you put Herod in there, you put Pharaoh in there, you put Nero in there, you put Caligula in there. That's what we're doing, right? And so, and the mind, and this is what Stephanie is talking about. We have got to break out from these generational dysfunctions and begin to start thinking what is best for us. I heard an economist say, that if we are thinking about them and they are thinking about them and they are not thinking about us and we are not thinking about us, who is thinking about us? If we are always looking at what they're doing and they are always looking out for themselves, then who is looking out for us? And this is what I want to talk about. Because we've got to start as a people looking out for us. And the first thing we got to do is say, hey, that doesn't make any sense. That we right here in this state, Selma is in this state. Tuscaloosa is in this state. Birmingham, where the four girls got bombed. One of the most cruel individuals of the civil rights movement, Bull Connor, lived in this state, not too far from where I'm sitting even now. George Wallace stand on the steps of the University of Alabama and said segregation today, segregation tomorrow, segregation forever. Right? So we see historically in real time, it's not been not too far ago, that there are people that are still alive when the bombing of those girls happened in that 16th Street Baptist Church. They're still alive. They may be in their 70s now, but they're still alive. Right? And they paid for that. And then for a generation to say, first of all, we are not our ancestors. That's a problem. That's a problem. And number two, that now we're going to sit home. We're going to sit home because ain't nobody going to do it. It's rigged. You've not participated in it enough to know if it's rigged or not. You see what I'm saying? And so it's this dysfunction that we keep speaking like we're knowledgeable in areas where we are not. Yeah. It's that shade tree uncle that knows how to fix every car, knows how to fix a Mercedes, knows how to fix a BMW. No, you see what I'm saying? That his truck is still on blocks in his backyard. But he sound like he know what he talking about. Hey, don't do that, because y'all know every one of us got one of them. You see what I'm saying? And what I'm saying is that it starts with the black family. We need to re-examine our structures. We need to examine our fixtures. We need to examine the things that we tell about our children. Black husbands need to understand their role. Black wives need to understand their role. Black mothers and fathers, parents need to understand their role. Black children need to understand their role. And what we do on a daily basis affects the future. Affects the future. Right? So yes, get your faith up. Get your hope up, your expectation up. Get your righteousness up. Well, however you do that. But guess what else you got to get up? You got to get your finances up. You got to get your emotional stability up. You got to get, and when I say you, I'm talking about we as a people. We've got to get our health up. Yes, we got to do it all. There's nothing that we can leave on the table. We've got to deal with our economics. We've got to deal with our relationships, our familial structures, our health. Yeah, we got to deal with our finances, all of those things. We have to find out what is going to happen. What are we doing in our own households that are causing us to not have it? You know, Toni Morrison said this. Toni Morrison said, racism is white people's insanity that drives black people insane. Let me say it again. That racism really is not our fight. It's white people's insanity that drives black people insane. The great esteemed author Toni Morrison said that. And that is true, because everything ain't race. Your children are not fighting in gangs because of race. Our daughters are not becoming pregnant out of wedlock because of race, primarily, right? No, race has structuralized certain things so that when they make bad decisions and bad choices, that they fall into the schemes and the institutions and the systems that race has constructed rather. And so I need you to understand that. But what that their daily choices, that race didn't make them sell drugs. No, but race and the systemic racism is going to affect them if they get caught. You see what I'm saying? And we can say what we, well, that, you know, listen, I know you think your babies are messiahs and all that kind of stuff, but we got to start thinking about how we're going to raise and lift up and even restructure the black family in 2025. We can no longer, hear me, Culture Call, we can no longer make excuses for the work we won't do in our families. Yeah, we got to do the work. Black family, we have to do the work. That's my centering moment. I got way, way more the girl. I need you to stay right here on the Culture Call with your boy, Elspeth Smith. Praise 93.3 FM 790 WTSK. This is the world premiere. And we are back right here on the Culture Call with your truly, Elspeth Smith. Hey, right here, Praise 93.3 FM 790 WTSK. And we're talking about the black family today. That's right. We are talking about strengthening the foundation, doing an introspective look into the black family. We're breaking generational dysfunction, and we are building generational inheritance and forward motion for the black family. I'm super excited about it. Again, this month is Black History Month, and so we're platforming black family, black love. We're going to do that all month. We know, that this is a political season still inside of our city and even in our country. You know, I think I want to take a pause from that because I could talk about the fecklessness of Washington. We could talk about, you know, people who want to be in power but not fulfill their obligation to those who they represent. We could talk about that all day, but I want to make a segue, an important segue here, talking about the black family. Because, hey, if nobody else is going to talk about us and focus on us, let's pay attention to the work on our own paper, because our test will be graded, right? And so we got to make sure that we are not doing the things that they can say that, even though we know they don't need, you know, anything, no right rhyme or reason to say anything negative about us. But the reality is that we don't want to do anything that promotes it or gives them cause to create other systems. You know, already they are attacking black excellence. They've already not given the HBCU schools their due. We already know the attack that they made on the black family with regards to Section 8 and projects and all those different kinds of things. Those caveats. Listen, we know what's going on. We know what they did. They know what they did. They're just hoping that we would fall into the rhyme and the scheme and the wheel of the project that they are they put it out so many years ago with regards to attacking our family. It was never to make strong black families so that he could talk about us not having strong black families. So they had to destroy the black family or tear it and rip it apart systemically, institutionally, economically, et cetera, and then come back and talk about how weak the black family is, right? It's like a joke of breaking your leg and then telling everybody they don't know why you can't walk. What is wrong with you? Bro, you broke my leg. But they'll spread it around like, you know, something was wrong with my leg from birth, when in fact, I broke my leg trying to run the race of your system, right? So I get all of that. And so we definitely don't want to encourage and to do things that are going to cause them to freak out. Because this whole idea, we're not going to talk about black history, because you know why? Because if you talk about black history is our success against the black history that they have. They set up every opportunity for us to fail, and we keep rising to the top like cream, right? And so that's the reality of it, right? But I want to make sure that we are doing, as a community, everything that we can do as black homes and black families to make sure that we set a proper foundation for the future. Our foreparents did that, and I think somewhere we let it go. And, I want to save a little bit of room, and I'll tell you a little later why I think we let it go, or what I think happened when we let it go. You know, I might talk about that on the second half. Because when you're trying to be somebody that you're not, when you're privileged by somebody, when you're privileged to have proximity to somebody else's culture and identity, and you disconnect from yours, you'll start thinking it is yours when it's really not yours. That you are too a part of an experiment, right? To see if you will disconnect from your roots, your people, your XYZ, right? That, think that's very important. But I'm going to leave that right there. I brought some numbers with me. So y'all can't be like, well, he just talking. Nope. I'm bringing numbers with me. Let's talk about household income, black household income. Let's talk about it. According to the U.S. Census Bureau 2020 data, the median household income for black families is $43,892 compared to $71,664 for white families and $54,870 for Hispanic families. So our income median is $43,044 if we round it up. Their income, white folks' income, is $72,000. Hispanic income is $55,000. And so so the immigrants, the Hispanics have come over and surpassed us as black folk when it comes to household median income, right? When you add all black folks up, add all white folks up, when you add, I mean, that's poor, middle class, upper, whatever class, yes. So we need to start thinking not just race, but class. Because our money is being measured. And we have the least growth of wealth in the country. But now, here it is. As much as we want to say systemically that might be, I'm not discounting that. Why are you trying to buy a Gucci? Why are you trying to flash a car? Why are you trying to buy a Brahmin bag? Where are you going? Who is looking at you so you can wear it on the first Sunday? Right? We spend so much money in Asian shops with nails and hair. We spend so much money on sneakers and all of that, that we are the least likely to have own homes, which is the foundational principle for wealth. Right? You live in an apartment, but yeah, you're trying to buy houses. No. That's not even how that works. What are we doing? Right? And so when you think about it, we are $10,000 behind. Actually, $11,000 behind the Hispanics. Facts. We are almost $30,000 annually behind Caucasian white folks, white families. Yeah. So while you're getting your faith up, you need to get your finances up. You got to get your money up now because it's having an effect. It's having an effect. And now the most poor in this country is the white poor. But the face of the poverty in this country is the black face. You got to understand. You got to understand that. You see? And then when you dig into these numbers, education has a lot to do with that. Opportunity has a lot to do with these numbers as well. But those are the numbers. And that was by the U.S. Census Bureau. 2020, just 5 years removed. Right? Here are the incarceration rates. Let's talk about that. The incarceration rates, the NAACP 2020 data, so it's recent data, reports that 1 in 3 black men will be incarcerated in their lifetime, compared to 1 in 17 white men and 1 in 6 Hispanics. Black men or black individuals are 5 times more likely to be incarcerated than white individuals and 3 times more likely to be incarcerated than Hispanic individuals, which means our black men are going to jail. 1 out of every 3. 1 out of every 17 white person, but 1 out of every 3. That's the statistics from the NAACP. You see what I'm saying? So that means you count 3 guys, 1 of them going to jail is what the data says. I'm not saying that's fact. I'm saying what they're saying is that you count 1, 2, 3. 1 of them 3 going to jail. Right? And before you get 1 of them going to jail, you got to count 17 white men. And before you get 1 Hispanic going to jail, you got to count 5. Which means, watch this. I get it, y'all. I get it because I can hear some of y'all saying, well, you know, X, Y, Z. No, I'm talking about our decisions now. Because you cannot listen. You'll never change if your change is contingent upon the behavior of somebody else other than you. You can change who you are. Now, if it's 1 in 3 black men, you got to make sure that you ain't one of the 3. I mean, or you ain't that 1 out of the 3. That's your choice. That's your decision. That's not systematic. That's not institutionalized. No, that's one of those 3 guys, black guys, have made a decision that will ultimately lead them to jail. That's what the data says, y'all. I'm not, listen. Don't roll your eyes at me while you're listening. Turn it up. Turn the radio up. Turn it up in your ear because I need you to understand it, right? Let's talk about household structure. We talked about median household income, incarceration rates. Let's talk about household structure. The American Community Survey 2019 data reports that 64% of black families are headed by a single parent, compared to 24% of white families and 34% of black families. We are over 14% over the halfway point, that our families are being led by a single individual. You feel what I'm saying? Now, again, I don't need you to get mad. I don't need you to get upset. Or maybe I might need you to get angry enough to make some adjustments. But I'm bringing you these facts because, again, on paper, this don't look good. You feel what I'm saying? I need us to take ownership. I need us to have conversations. I need us to have sexual conversations. I need to have sexual protection conversations. I need us to be able to say, okay, yeah. See, because they've sexualized and sensualized us. They do it to little boys. We do it to little girls. We start talking about boyfriend and girlfriend when they're in kindergarten and put those things in their minds. But we don't couple that with an advanced, intelligent sexual education and sexual empowerment. We don't tell them the benefit and the blessing of keeping themselves until. Because guess what, y'all? A baby is an economy. Let's try it again. Let's try it one more time. A baby is a whole economy by itself. And what the numbers just said to us is that in the black community, in our community, 64% of black families are headed by a single parent. Now, that I don't know whether that's by death, whether that's by divorce, or whether single people are just choosing to do, I don't know what that is, but I'm telling you, 64. So already, sis, I know you could do it by yourself. I'm glad that you could. I'm glad all of that. But we have to start getting some standards right here in our household structure. We've got to start talking about, okay, why is that the decision? Why is that? And I've talked to single people. A lot of single ladies in 2025 are tired of waiting for what they call good men. And a lot of men are tired of waiting for what they call good women. But they ain't stopped sleeping around and making love and having sex. So they're producing these babies. And then they're going to fight over who can see them. Whose baby can they have your last name? They're going to fight all over that. But here it is. That baby is growing up. The moment that it comes into conception, that baby becomes an economy. That baby becomes dollars and cents. Facts. Exactly. I've challenged even the men in our church. Hey, if you got a child out there and you've not been paying child support and you know that's your child, go get a job. Because you are an infidel. Let's call a thing a thing. You are a piss poor man. If you have a child in this world, and you're not providing for that child. But here's the deal. Here's the deal. Men have to start thinking that if I am going to be with this woman, if I am going to have sex with this woman, and she is not wife potential, then she's not mother potential. Well, well, well. There it is. Sis, come closer. Come closer to the mic. Turn it up. Don't turn me off. If he is not husband material, he ain't going to be father material. You're going to spend the first 10, 15 years fussing about, you know, this thing and that thing and you not being chosen. It was just a night. How I know it's mine. You're going to go through all of that. Them not providing. And you know what? You're creating systems of dysfunction, systems of poverty. And that child didn't ask to be here. That child is a result of the decisions that have been made for it. And so now, that child already comes here not understanding the reality of a father and a mother in a house being totally protected. They don't know the discipline and the nurture in one place and the love of both parents. And what the numbers say is that we, come on family, we are at 64%. That's where we are. We are at 64%. That means more than half of our children are growing up in a house without two parents. And that's a choice. Sex is a choice. I know we don't like, I know we on a religious station. Yeah, go. Hey, sex is a choice. It's all up and down in the Bible. Huh? We want sex, we want money, but we don't want to talk about it. And we have to, because it's not talking about it. It's shining a light, an intelligent light upon it that has us perpetuating levels of dysfunctions. Right? 44% of black children live with both parents, compared to 74% of white children and 58% of Hispanic children. That means we are below the middle when it comes to having two-parent homes. Yeah. Now, listen, hear me, beloved, because I feel like I need to segue right here. In our reality, we all grow up with a different kind of measure. I get it. I understand. I was blessed to have a two-parent home. My wife was blessed to have a two-parent home. I get it. Things happen. Divorce happens. Death happens. I understand. Incarcerations happen. But what I am saying is decisions have to precede all of that. But our parents stayed together, not simply because every day was good, not because they just loved each other so much, but guess what? They figured that keeping the family together was worth it for the children, watch this, for the children to create something. I said this on Sunday, and I'll talk a little bit more about it later. God gives a man, he gives a man a plan, and then he gives a clan. If the man don't have a plan, he don't deserve a clan. That's the Bible. I'm going to give you a plan, man, and I'm going to give you a clan. Right? Between plan and clan is I'm going to give you a woman. And woman, if the man don't have no plan, he shouldn't deserve no clan that comes through you. Teach the lesson. I think I will. Let me say it again. If he don't have a plan. If the man don't have a plan, you don't know where you fit. If he does not have the plan is the reason why he needs to be looking for a woman or have a woman, because the woman adds favor to the plan. I'm in the book. Yeah. He that finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. But that can only happen when he gets a plan. You bring favor, girl, to the plan. And then out of that plan, y'all begin to strategize and how we are going to build a clan. Woo! You teaching good today, Reverend. I think I'll keep on doing it. Hey, y'all take a breather, get you something to drink. I got to take a break. Hey, this is the Culture Call with Elvis Smith right here on Praise 93.3790 WTSK. Keep it locked right here. We'll be back. This is the world. We are back right here on the Culture Call with yours truly, L. Spencer Smith. It's the top of the hour, 11 a.m. and some change right here on 790 WTSK, Praise 93.3 FM. And we are having a wonderful day with a very provocative conversation, and I want you to lean in. Hey, want to welcome those of you who are listening to us on our second hour. And we are talking about black family this week, and we want to make sure we all lean into what we can do as individuals to create stronger, healthy, forward progressing families. I want to make sure that is what we do. You know, I started a series at our church this week called Family Still Matters. And I told them specifically that I'm going to be talking about the black family. To tie in both the love and the black history element of it. I'm going to be talking about that specifically. Why? Because I think it is so very, very important that we as a people look at what we can do for ourselves. Yeah, that we can gain a level of black empowerment that dismantles dysfunctions in our previous generations. You know, we have a tendency to revere, which is a good thing, our ancestors. We should, our great grandparents, our grandparents, our mothers, our fathers. We should honor and reverence their presence in our lives. I mean, I mean, every day, there's not a day that I don't think about my mama, my dad, my grandmamas, my granddads, all of those. These people have made me who I am. But also, I take a very clear look at some of the things that they might have shared or passed down to their children, my brothers and I, my sister. What they passed down may not have always been 100% correct, or was correct for their time, but not for my time. And so rearing my children, you know, and I make sure that I tell my kids, my wife and I, we've always made sure that we have brought our kids along to the narrative and the stories, both the good and the bad, so that they can be have the foundation of strong community, strong thought, strong thinking, strong roots, right? That as high as you see the tree goes up, the roots go down even deeper, right? If you want a building to go high up, you got to dig that foundation really deep down, right? Because you can't have a shallow foundation, and then have a tall building that's going to withstand the winds and the rains and the torrential weather that might come, right? So you got to dig deep, and that's very important. Part of that digging process is to say, yeah, that right there, grandmama, I love you, but that right there, that wasn't right. That's not right. You know? Or, yeah, that might have worked when XYZ was the situation, but for now, it just does not work. And so what we're faced with as a black community is going back and making sure that we do our homework and, yes, continue and keep all those things that do work. That's what the Bible says. It tells the Hebrew people to make sure you teach your children and your children's children. Put it on their hearts and the frontlets of their eyes, that wherever they go, they will remember these tenets, these statutes, these decrees, these laws. That when you leave here, that they'll have a system of how to function with me. But that does not mean that the children, the Hebrews or the children of Israel, have to fall into flail like their foreparents did. As a matter of fact, before they could even enter the promised land, God says, I got to kill all the men of rebellion. Everybody that didn't listen to me, because I don't want to take rebellion. I don't want to take all of this dysfunction, all of this over into the promised land. It's right there in Joshua when you read it. Right. And so we at every stage and every page of family have to do that same thing. Keep what is necessary. But then not being able to uproot, confront, break, disconnect from that which is deleterious. That which is destructive for our families and our lives in a present context. Genesis 12 is a model of that culture call. When God says to Abraham, listen, your father Terah is dead. Y'all come from the era of Chaldees. I need you to disconnect from what you've learned and what you've seen. And I need you to get out is the word. I want you to disconnect from that and go to a land that I will show you. And there we're going to create another family. I'm going to bring you into a new ontology, a new origin, a new understanding of who you really are. That's what I'm going to do. Right? And so there are things, Abram, that I got to disconnect you from so that your family can be blessed. It's right there, Genesis 12. He says, and I'm going to bless you. I'm going to make your name great. And through you, all of the families of the earth are going to be blessed. That's the promise. That when we start doing the work of deconstruction for our families, right? When we start doing that, then what we're going to find is simply this, is that we have a responsibility to make sure that what God has made us to be. See, our last names are our journeys. That's our journey. That's not necessarily, that's that last name that we are given, Brown, Smith, Johnson, Jenkins, Brown, you know what I'm saying? All of that is our journey. We have journeyed through that family line. But our beginning, our origin is steeped in Genesis 1, that we have been made in the image and the likeness of God. You feel what I'm saying? So that brings us to another level of reality. And what one of the things that we have to do is do that work. You love your papa. Definitely. I know you did. Sure did. But guess what? Guess what? Everything that Papa did was not correct. You love your big mama. I know, because I love mine too. But everything she did was not correct. Was not. And I'm not ashamed to say that. It was not. I love them dearly, but I've been given the responsibility. I'm not going to do that. That's not what I, that's not how I want, you know, you love your papa, but your papa stepped out on your big mama. That ain't right. And big mama stayed. Just because they did it don't mean it was right. See, those are the things that I'm talking about. We have to make sure that we confront ourselves, that we do the work of making sure that we are not perpetuating cycles. Yeah? Perpetuating cycles for our family namesake. That's just a journey. I'm a Smith by journey. I'm God's child by design and origin. I hope you'll understand that I'm a Smith by journey. I came through Joseph and Lynette Smith. My daddy came from Joseph and Elizabeth. My mama came from Curtis and Ruth. So we all have a journey. Our last name speaks of the journey that God allowed us to come here in this earth and live through. We all live through a last name. Right? But our origin is God. And we don't need to forget that. We need to start from that. So that means that I have a right, or better yet, God has a right to say, hey, I'm going to disconnect you from this because I need to talk to you about that. You see what I'm saying? I need to disconnect you from this so that your family can be different. Your journey can, you start a new journey for you and your children, your grandchildren. Right? That just because your name came into this earth in poverty does not mean that you have to end up there. You can literally disconnect, make different decisions, and your children will not know. My children will not know the house I grew up in. I took them by there. I showed them where it was. My wife took her by the house that she grew up in. Yeah, they no. Because that's how our parents had to start off does not mean, let me say this again, church, does not mean that they have to start off that day. There's nothing sacred about that. There's nothing divine about that. You feel what I'm saying? That's what I'm trying to communicate. That we have been given choices. We have been given choices. And if we do not understand that choice is ours to begin to change and to rearrange, etc., then guess what's going to happen? We're going to create levels and generations of dysfunction. That's why I'm having this conversation with us family. What will we choose? We have to start getting married with giving ourselves an exit for divorce. Yes. You know why? Because of the plan. The plan. Y'all, see, the man, you came with a plan. And woman of God, you connected with that man because you saw yourself in that plan. Don't connect with a man that don't have a plan. I'm going to say this again. Don't connect with a man that does not have a plan. Don't do it. Don't. Let me say, great goodness. Don't connect. Because that plan is the thing that we come back to and say, hey, we're building a new journey. We can't end like this. We can't go our separate ways. And I'm not talking about somebody abusing you. We're not talking about that. I'm talking about what we call irreconcilable differences. First of all, number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, that is not an iteration from our black community. Irreconcilable differences. That's not ours. We just borrowed it. But that ain't how our families were raised. Listen, if he leaves his underwear on the floor, pick the underwear up. Fuss at Rufus, but don't. Where you going? Where we going though? We ain't going nowhere though. I'm not, no. Because we got a plan. We got to stay together to make sure our children know what it looks like to be covered by both parents. You see what I'm saying? That's what I'm screaming. And I hope I'm screaming it loud. Yeah, the plan is the thing that keeps us together. I know the captain and Tennille said love will keep us together. Yeah, it should. But the reality of the matter is the plan. The plan, because every day I'm not going to like you. I'm loving you enough to keep working our plan, what we set out to do. My wife and I were talking about being married when we were in college, and every day has not been easy, but because of our family, because of the plans that we have to not create a family of dysfunction, of what we saw in our bloodline, people going from husband to husband, wife, and they're on their fifth and third. Listen, you're going to mess around and call somebody the wrong name. That's what's going to happen to you. That's what I'm saying. We have to figure out another measure of how we keep family together, because it is a financial decision. Do y'all hear me, church? Sound like I'm preaching, right? No, I need you to really understand and capture that moment that you have to figure out what's going on. My black brothers, hear me. Black brothers who are black sons will turn into black fathers, and we owe it to our seed to not be incarcerated. We owe it to our seeds to stay in that house and raise them, to be a part of their life, to nurture them, to teach them respect, to teach them how to treat women, how to care for women, how to be sensitive, how to have emotional intelligence. We owe it to them to do such. I want to say it again. We owe it to them to do such. Right? We have to. Yeah. It's important. And here it is. Let me put a little religion on it. And it's a mandate from God. Yes, it is. It is a mandate from God. Right? Let me give you some more numbers. Divorce rate, according to the American Community Survey, black couples, 32% get divorced. White couples, 24.9% get divorced. Hispanic couples, 24.4%, right? So let's round it up. 33% of all married couples in the black community get divorced. 25% of all married couples in the white community get divorced. And 24% of all Hispanic couples get divorced, which means we're leading in divorce, according to the American Community Survey. Now, I don't believe them numbers. Okay, I didn't ask you to believe it. I'm just giving you the data. And when I did this research, I was researching what I believe to be reputable numbers, because, of course, research and social media, Google can lead you to any kind of numbers skewed for any kind of purpose and or perspective. But the reality is that, yeah, we're not staying together like our families used to do. We have options. We have options. And I tell brothers, I said, let me say this to you, because I heard a brother say, well, I don't want to, you know, some of these women won't let you lead them. They don't want you to lead them. I said, what you saying, son? He said, they don't want to let you lead. They don't want to follow. I said, okay, all right. I said, let me, you know how I do. Let me do some numbers. I said, can I do some numbers? They said, yes. Yes, sir, you can do the numbers. I said, okay. According to statistics today, the most educated person in this country is a black woman. They are black women that are the most educated, degreed women, people in this entire country. Sir, so that means that a woman that you want to lead, you want to follow you, if you get you one of them women that you want that from, she 10 times got a more education, more all of that than you already have. What's your level of education? I got a bachelor's degree. Okay, cool. Great. All right. Where you work? I work at Mercedes. Okay. All right. So here it is. The woman that you want to lead and you want her to follow you, she probably got her master's degree, a double master's, or some kind of specialist degree. She are in your age, which is about, I'm 30, 30, 35. Okay, yeah, them sisters, them high power sisters, ain't, what's your plan? Because all you just articulated is you want to follow you. Follow you where, sir? Follow you where? Huh? Where y'all going? Where you going, son? Well, you know, the Bible. No. You talking to the preacher. Don't do that. You don't want to go to what the Bible said. Leave that alone. Leave that. Because, see, I have to tell people, leave that Bible alone, because I already know you don't know what you're talking about when you say the Bible say. I already know. You don't pick that one or two random scriptures to support your point. I don't have a dog in this fight. I don't have a dog in this fight. What I'm telling you is what you're trying to lead and what you want to follow you is probably out of your range, unless you are super attractive and you got a plan that she can work with. Yeah, she's not going to follow you, sir. And that does not make her a Jezebel. That does not make her a bad woman. That means what she's saying is, sir, come up. And then we can talk. That's what she's saying. But what we do is because that language to me is abusive. That language is abusive. And let me say this, sis, because I know you grinning right now, rubbing your legs and shoulders and stuff. Tell him, pastor. Okay, well, let me talk to you. No man wants a woman because I want a man who can handle me. That man, let me say this again. Lord have mercy. That man, you don't want no man that can handle you. That man does not want to handle you. You need to be hooked up with that brother who want to lead and want you to follow. That's the man you want. You want that bachelor's degree man. No. Because after a man comes home from work, dealing with folks who are for against him, dealing with the rigors of life as just being a black man in America, trying to figure out how to navigate emotions and still stay sane in this country. You want somebody to come over and handle? No, you're not supposed. No, his job is not to handle you. Yo, and since you don't want him to handle you, you know why? Because he ain't been able to vent his anger. Your job is to be his peace. Not, you don't want him to handle you. What does that even mean? I want him to be able to, he got to be able to handle me. What are we even talking? I was like, girl, what? You can't be serious. You joking, right? Where's Ashton Kutcher? Somebody's got to be coming out of some bushes and say, you are the next on this comedy, you know, show. Because you can't, I want a man who can handle me. No, sis. Your job is to be favor, peace. That when he comes from home and you may have work too, but when he gets home, there's another role. And it's okay, babe. All right. Calm down. I get it. Come, let me give you a hug. Rub his brow. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, that sounds like a stepford wife. That sounds like I'm not doing that for no man. Well, that's why you don't have one. Hello? Yeah, because the wife's role is to make sure that let me bring his pressure down. Let me bring his. Do you know who's the most who's the earliest to die in black families? It's the black men, because they don't have an outlet. And when you rub his back, scratch his head, you know, do you need anything? Blah 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 blah. And he calms down and he'll start talking to you. Now watch this, and he won't talk to a side piece. Now, see, here's the problem. Come closer. You've been spelling side piece, P-I-E-C-E. But what he's really looking for is P-E-A-C-E. Oh, well, okay. Nobody want to say nothing. Right? And so when the book, how y'all say the good book say that it is better for a man to dwell on a rooftop by himself than in a house with a cantankerous brawling woman. It is better. Listen, that's what the text says. I ain't make it up. That's what the writ said, y'all. Yes, that's what it says. It is far better. That man ain't come home to fight you, and he a man, huh? You gonna rile him up, and then he might just swing, not because he think you a dude, but he's got to release that fuel somewhere. You see what I'm appealing to your wisdom. I'm appealing to your wisdom. We won't ever get this marriage thing right. If we won't get the family thing right. If we won't get the marriage thing right. We won't get the marriage thing right until we understand that that's kind of how we create it. Then he's going, I promise you, a good man, while you're soothing him, will shift to soothe you. Baby, let me rub your feet. He'll be trying to soothe you while you're trying to soothe him. Because that's what good men do. I want to make sure my you okay, babe? You good? He'll get up and fix your food. He'll get up and cook. When you provide him peace, when he know he can come home and disconnect from the world. And sir, when you got a wife like that, when you got a woman like that, go home. Okay, all right. You don't need no other pieces. Once you can find peace at your home and the woman that you got that's attending to your plan. Because if that woman is doing what she's supposed to do and attending to your plan and to your clan, then every other woman, the Bible calls her a strange woman. And the Bible says of a strange woman that she's a deep pit. She's a deep ditch. That means you're going to fall in and disconnect and break up a home and break up a family. So, yeah, we got to teach. We got to begin to understand what roles mean. And roles are not about leadership, about leading one or political leadership or about having control over anybody. It's about compliment. It's not about control. It's about compliment. It's not about control, black family. It's about compliment. Yes. Exactly. Start a new trend. Get thee out. I don't care how you saw it. If you didn't see it the way that I'm teaching you now, disconnect. And start a new thing. I'm going to do this different. I'm not going to come on and hit my wife like my daddy did my mama. I'm not finna do that. No, I did not get married to change her name to Everlast. No, absolutely. Absolutely not. I'm not going to be disrespectful to my husband like my mama was to my daddy. I'm going to try to be every day. God teach me how to be his peace. That's what I want. So you can provide a stable and a loving atmosphere for your children, your family. Man, I got to take a break right here on the Culture Call. Listen, listen, listen. But there's so much more to come. I need you to keep it right here and don't you go anywhere. This is the world premiere. And we are back, family, right here on the Culture Call with yours truly, L. Spencer Smith. I'm telling you. I know you all are enjoying this conversation. I'm telling you. Yeah, I would be. Yeah, definitely. You need to tell somebody. We talking about black family and all that encompasses black family. I've got one more statistic that I want to share, and I wanted to land on this one because it's very, very, very important to me, and I know it's going to be very important to you. When I saw these numbers, y'all, I was so upset, and that was health and life expectancy numbers for black families. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, and this is 2020 data, so this just happened, reports that black individuals have a life expectancy of 74.7 years compared to 78.8 years for white individuals and 81.8 years for Hispanic individuals. Black individuals are more likely to die from heart disease, stroke, and cancer more than any other racial group. So that means on an average, the average black person lives to be 75. The average white person lives to be 79. And the average Hispanic person lives to be 82. And out of the diseases that can kill, black people are more likely, our family members. And now you gotta add in Alzheimer's and dementia, senility into that as well. And that we are losing a lot of our roots and our history to dementia. And of course, diabetes and all these other kinds of things, strokes and heart disease, coronary artery disease, all these different kinds of things are prevalent in our communities. When you add the stress, we just talked about stress, husband and wife. When you add the poor diet, right, the things that we eat, we love our soul food, cooked in lard and grease. When we talk about a sedentary lifestyle that a lot of us are not necessarily active, that when we get home, we just plop in a chair. we are slowly but surely killing ourselves off. And at my age, I never thought that I would every day I have to think about, you know, take supplements and take whatever is necessary to keep my body up, you know, in my 50s. I'm not mid 50, I'm early 50 still. So, you know, but I'm thinking about, you know, my dad who died from prostate cancer, my mom who died from heart disease. I'm thinking about, you know, my grandfather who died from colon cancer. I'm thinking about all of the, my wife's grandmother who died from dementia related occurrences. And to all, every one of us who are listening today, and you might be one of these ones that's suffering from that. I want us to move out of our vernacular. Well, I got to die from something. Yes, you're right. You can die from finish. That's what you can die from. You can die from finished. I finished my course. I kept the faith. You can die from that. But everyone has been placed on the inside of you, has been poured out of you, and there's no more use for you in the earth in terms of time because you came to do what you were put here to do. You finished your journey. But not die prematurely from things that we can change. So we could change by discipline and change by accountability. Yeah. Right. And so, you know, that really struck me hard because we're not living long enough to see generations as black families. I was fortunate enough to grow up knowing my great grandparents. She lived to be, my grandfather's mother lived to be 106. You know? But I never met my mom's grandmother. She died before I even was born. You see what I'm saying? Of diabetes related issues. And when you add stress of just being black in America, when you add the tension of all of that, what we have found solace in is religion. And I get it, y'all. I understand it. It's important. But here's what the text says. Here's what religion should tell us. In 3 John 2, I do above all things wish that ye prosper and be in health, even as your soul prosper. In other words, as your mind, your soul, and your emotions, you de-stress yourself. That promotes prosperity and good health. Prosperity there in the Greek, it means to have an excellent or a wonderful journey. It's like a ship that finds itself in a place that does not have any kind of storm. The wind is in its favor, right? The waves are working with that ship. He says that John makes that gives that allegory, that scenario. He paints that picture so that we can begin to see. People understood what he meant in the old world. None of us sail to go places now, you know, to travel, right? We get to hop on a plane, or we get in the car, and we use interstate. But the truth of the matter is, what John was saying is that I want you to see your life as if you are a ship on a sea. And I want you to prosper. That was a big word back in those times. Have a prosperous journey. Have a prosperous journey. What does that mean? And they will end up with Godspeed. God bless. The speed of God go with you. The covering, the winds of God go with you. And he's saying to Gaius in 3 John 2, he says, as your mind, as your soul, as you begin to reconfigure, rethink some things, as you begin to re-strategize and to comprehend some things that's going to cause you to activate your mind primarily. Paul talks about that too in Philippians. You know, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are just. Huh? If there be of good accord, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, what he says, think on these things. He says, and the peace of God, Which passive understanding? What's the precedent of that? Be anxious for nothing. He's talking about your soul now. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication. With thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. Yes, pray about it, but be grateful. Pray about it, but have an attitude of gratitude. Then he says, and the peace of God. He's talking about your journey now. Peace of God shall guard your heart and minds through Christ Jesus. Finally, my brethren, you see, it's this whole mindset. Black folks, it's not, you don't need no money yet. You need a strategy first. Because if you get money without a strategy, you're going to lose it. You're going to spend it on something you don't need to. You don't need to get married first. You need a strategy. You need a plan. Because if you get married without a plan or a strategy, you're going to lose your marriage. You don't need children yet. You need a what? A plan. Because if you get children and don't have a plan or a strategy for why God trusted them, trusted you with them, then you're going to let them run roughshod in the street. You're not going to raise them in the fear and the admonition of the Lord. You're not going to do that. Right? So what John is saying is, I need you that your whole body holistically depends on the plans and the strategy. Now, here's what Jeremiah says. I know my thoughts and my plans concerning you. Thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end. We're ending before God has expected. Try it again, because they're not. We are ending our lives before God expected, to give you an expected end. New King James Version says a future and a hope. That God says, I want to give you a future to expect, but I can't do that if either you don't have a plan or your plan ain't my plan. That's what the text says. Absolutely. And so, hey, when I was younger, when I was in college, man, I could eat a whole pizza by myself and drink a whole 2 liter of Coke by myself, because I was active on the band field every day. Every day. I knew I wasn't going to keep that weight, but I was eating mama's pizza. 222 mama. Right? I don't even know if it's still an activity now. Right? But I cannot eat a whole pizza today. Man, please. I can barely eat one or two pieces, maybe. And Coke, no. It's going to have to be Coke, Diet Coke, or Coke Zero if it's going to be a Coke. Or go and get you some water, sir. Because my 20-year-old self is not my 50-year-old self. And if you keep you probably could drink and smoke and do all you wanted to do in your 20s. And it had no effect. But now you 60. And you 50 and you 70. No, you got to rethink some things. This is what Paul is saying. This is what Jeremiah was saying in that text in chapter 29, verse 11. This is what John was saying to Gaius. I want you to prosper. I want you to get to your desired destination. You feel me? Those things are important. I thank God for 75, but 75 is really what the statistics say. 75 ain't good enough. You talk about 99 and a half won't do, then 75 ain't gonna do. 99 is an A plus any time of day. 99.5 is an A plus. But everywhere I can think, a 75 is a C, huh? Yes. Exactly. And none of us, because of our choice, I'm talking about black, white, Hispanic, whatever, none of us are getting to that older age, you know? And I get it. It's a whole lot of things. It's the diet. It's all of that. Sis, you can't eat 3 and 4 pieces of fried chicken and cake and ice cream because I need something sweet after dinner. Go ahead on and get your Alto and suck on a mint, sis. But don't be getting a half a pie and some ice cream. Don't do that. You already know what's in your bloodline. You already know that diabetes and high cholesterol and those things are in your bloodline. You already know it. And don't use to fussing at me. Don't you roll your eyes at my like that. Don't do that. I mean, you have to start thinking. My prayer is every day, Lord, let my wife and I live long enough to see our great grandchildren, to hold their hand, to touch their face, to be able to communicate. I'm grateful that my parents were able to see their grandchildren do great things, go in great directions. I still don't think they live long enough. We can put any kind of religion on it, and God ain't picking flowers like that. He don't need no roses like that. He don't need it. No. Then he got to pick your mama and my daddy. That ain't what he got. No. They had bodily issues going on that prevented them from getting to the expected end. And I said to myself, nope. I'm going to do the best I can do. My wife is beautiful. I want to live a long time. I'm not finna leave her here to be fighting off these men. I tell her that all the time. Nope. We got to make better choices, family. We got to make better choices. And we listed them all out today. We have to make sure that we can show up for our future. We got to monitor it. We got to monitor our children's children. And prayerfully, our great-grandchildren, to make sure that they are living out this new journey, this Genesis 12 journey. We've disconnected, but we're starting a whole new bloodline, not necessarily bloodline, but a whole new train of comprehensive thought that's coming through our family. And I know we can do it. Hey, I need y'all to stay right here. I'm about to land this plane, family, but I need you to keep it right here on the Culture Call. We got a few more things to talk about. Well, family, we've come to the end of another powerful broadcast. Man, I don't want to leave you, but I got to do it. Family, black family, we can strategize to make sure that we have a bright, bright future. We can do the work. Yes, we may have to disconnect and we may have to, you know, call a thing a thing and remove it out of our bloodline or out of our, you know, we have to confront some generational things. But guess what we can do? We can love. We can stay together. We can build for a future so that no matter what system or institution they try to set up to hinder us, it will not work. You got me? Yeah. Listen, keep it here. Tomorrow, I'll be right back from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. right here on Praise 93.3 FM, 790 WTSK, The Culture Call with yours truly, L. Spencer Smith. I need you to have a blessed day, a powerful day. Love somebody intentionally. And if you can't do somebody some help, please don't do nobody no harm. Right? Until tomorrow, I'll catch you, family. Y'all have a great day.